The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Finley Campbell was a hero of the Great Rebellion, but now he's a man adrift, a warrior without a clear enemy to fight. Once the legendary masked gladiator in Golgotha's arena, his true identity unknown to all but a select few, he unwittingly killed the brother of Julian Skye, the man who would later become his best friend. It's a secret that has burned in Finley's conscience ever since.
I killed a lot of people fighting in the arenas. It's kill or be killed.
But Finley's not the only one with secrets. His true love, Evangeline, has never told him the full extent of her twisted father's depredations.
Welcome home to your daddy's loving arms.
These and other dark revelations have been dormant until now, when the web of deceit inevitably begins to unravel, with devastating consequences for the guilty and innocent alike.
And we must regret
this place indeed.
How the hell are we supposed to fight something like that?
Deathstalker Honor, Episode 4, No More Secrets.
The USS Hampton, a guided missile cruiser, floats in the Pacific Ocean 100 miles east of Japan. Its crew prepares to conduct top-secret initial trials of the Plasma Propulsion System Multiple Delivery Missile, PPS-1 for short. The missile utilizes Teflon fuel. Its top speed is theorized at over 30,000 miles per hour. No known defense system can counter it. But the Hampton is about to be attacked by 6 unmarked and heavily armed helicopters. 37 sailors will lose their lives, another 28 will be wounded, and 5 PPS-1 missiles will be stolen.
Lieutenant Sturm, bring the phalanx to bear! Order the gunners to fire at will!
Phalanxes are out of commission, sir.
Both of them?
Yes, sir. The 127s aren't responding either.
How is this possible? It just can't be.
Captain, look out there. Look.
Lieutenant, evacuate.
Mac Bolan's going to need all the help he can get to retrieve the missiles. And help comes in a tight little package named Kerry Tanaka, a Stony Man operative from Tokyo who's beautiful, intelligent, and lethal.
Look out! Up ahead, it's an ambush!
Hang on! Nice shooting!
Watch the road!
Together, they'll follow a trail of peril that will lead to an ancient fortress hidden deep in the mountains of China.
So, we finally meet face to face. The one person who might have stopped me. And you've arrived at this most momentous time. Perhaps it would be fitting to keep you on hand to witness the destruction of everything you hold dear. Or perhaps I can amuse myself by slaying you in hand-to-hand combat first.
Bring it on, General.
Mac Bolan number 82, Warload. Available in April 2006. Don't miss it.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your ears.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King Williams, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, David Coyne, Casey Jones, and Christopher Graybill. Deathlands Number 10, North Star Rising. Black. Blackness. The hands on his throat, remorselessly strong.
You are about to die.
Pocked skin, circle of silver and bald head, a smell of burned cloth and hair. Major Commissar Grigory Zimyanin of the Internal Security Section of Moscow felt as though someone had pushed a brass-hilted bayonet into the center of his skull, then stirred it around, puddling his brains. The Russian was immensely strong, and he was recovering from the jump with remarkable speed. As consciousness began to creep back into the blurred fringes of his mind, so shards of memory also lurched out into the open. There had been a dreadful firefight, with many corpses, a body of one of the enemy, flaming like a beacon of defiance, the Yank flag, a winding staircase, shrouded in choking smoke. The brawl had ended with swirling blackness and his fingers clawing at the throat of the leader of the terrorists. With a massive effort of will, Zimyanin managed to open his eyes. Something was wrong. Something had changed in the glass-walled chamber. The colors had altered, and the air tasted different. The thick, choking smoke was gone, and the air was thin and cold. The Russian had lived at altitude in winter and knew the sensation well. Somehow, while they were all unconscious, the Americans had succeeded in transporting the whole mysterious complex to a mountain. In his attempts to master the language of his bitter enemies, the officer had been secretly learning the English tongue, using a book with a publication date of 1911, nearly 200 years earlier. The English tongue for the benefit of the Russian gentleman abroad.
I beg your pardon, but could you inform me as to the whereabouts of my entourage?
Where could all of his men have gone? Dozens of troops couldn't just disappear into space. He fumbled for the pistol at his belt, feeling the familiar shape of the 9mm Makarov blaster. Now his eyes were focusing, settling on something opposite him, that was colored dazzling white and vivid crimson.
By the anvil and the hammer!
It was a young, skinny albino boy, his hair like the tumbled snow around the hamlet of Ozbarchik, in the far, far northeast. A thread of fresh blood inched from the lad's nose, his mouth sagged open, and his eyes were shut tight. Next to him lay an old man with wild silver hair, clutching a small, unconscious puppy. A woman with hair as red as blazing pitch was stretched flat on the floor, but she was moving, fingers opening and closing as she approached consciousness. Ryan Cotter blinked, opening his one good eye. The patch over his ruined left eye had shifted during the fight with the Russian, and he lifted a hand to straighten it. And saw Zimyanin. The stocky Russian was crouched on the far side of the gateway chamber, like a beast waiting to spring. His heavy features were smeared with soot, and a worm of dried blood from the corner of his mouth had clotted in his drooping mustache.
Bastard.
Ryan's own blaster, the 9mm 6-hour P226, was holstered in his belt, and he began to reach for it. Zimyanin had a glacial moment of frozen time to make up his mind. Somehow, the Americans had disposed of his men and moved him to a different location. The one-eyed killer was fumbling for his pistol, and at least one of the others was coming around from the sleeping gas. Or whatever it was they'd used to knock everyone out. He made his decision, diving for the door to the glass-walled room. If he were to escape, this could be his best and only chance. A hand grabbed at Zimyanin's ankle. He kicked out. The Russian was at the door. Ryan's pistol had cleared its rig, and his finger was tightening on the trigger when the Russian darted through the doorway. There was a glimpse of the room beyond, then the door slammed shut.
Fire blast! He's triggered the jump mechanism again! Everyone down and get ready!
Already, the discs in the floor and ceiling were glowing, and a ragged spray of gas was filling the octagonal room. Zemyanin hesitated outside the gateway chamber, puzzled by what he saw. There was a small room with a larger room visible beyond it, behind a barred door. The wall to his left had broken down into fragments of powdered rock, but the peculiar thing was that the floor and walls were covered with a thin layer of pinkish slime, and there was a gut-churning smell of sickly decay.
Ah!
Ryan was slipping into unconsciousness again, struggling to keep a hold on his pistol. His mind tried to blank out the bizarre appearance and disappearance of the Russian Sekhman. He could hear someone in the chamber making coughing, choking sounds, but there was nothing he could do to help. The floor was vibrating beneath him, and he could feel a rumbling clear through the marrow of his bones. The heavy blaster dropped from his fingers. Beyond the thick armor-glass walls, Ryan thought he could just make out the figure of Zemyanin, but his vision was blurring, and nothing was certain.
What the hell?
As blackness gripped him, Ryan's last doubtful vision was of something moving beyond the walls of the gateway, something that was pale yellow and immeasurably huge. Jack Lauren lay face down in a stinking pool of his own vomit. Doc Tanner was bleeding copiously from the nose, the streaks of crimson dribbling over his neck and chest. J.B. Dix was even more sallow than usual.